Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and we are always on the 101.3 ESPN app, so you can check us out in the Google Play Store or the Apple Store as well on your iPhone, and you can also listen on that Amazon Echo Dot. You can ask Alexa to stream WCPV, and if I just caused your Alexa to stream WCPV, well, then I'm sorry it stopped doing what you were doing, but I'm happy you're now listening to us, so we appreciate that as well. So you can find us any number of places and ways, and we appreciate all of you who do find us on various different platforms. We go up until 6:45 today, Red Sox baseball, Chris Sale on the mound, so happy Sale Day, Sox fans. They're taking on the Royals. We'll get to those lineups in about 15 minutes from now. If you want to get in, you can, 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. Like Mojo and Milton, who starts right out today. He says, Brady, why would the Patriots trade up for the number 2 pick to get a quarterback and then pass on Lamar Jackson with the number 31 pick? Well, I think what Mojo and Milton, I don't even understand the question. The Patriots liked Baker Mayfield in particular. They had identified that the New York Jets were going to take Baker Mayfield at number 3. So the only spot that they could have been in was 1 or 2 to try to get Mayfield. So if Mayfield didn't get taken number 1 by Cleveland, then the Patriots were going to try to jump in to the draft at number 2, trade out with the Giants, and they were going to get Mayfield. So it has nothing to do with Lamar Jackson other than the fact that the Patriots loved Baker Mayfield reportedly, and they did not love Lamar Jackson. That's it. They decided that beyond Baker Mayfield, that was it. That was the guy they wanted. And if it wasn't going to be Mayfield, then they did not want a quarterback until they got a quarterback all the way down in the 7th round. And so speaking of that, we're going to talk in just about 5 minutes from now with David Schultz of 103.7 The Game in Louisiana, and out in Lafayette, Louisiana. He covers LSU. We'll talk about Danny Etling, get to know the Patriots' new possible signal caller. But first, I continue to just be impressed by Brad Stevens. And I think, yes, you have to give a ton of credit to the Celtics themselves, to the players on the floor. Al Horford, 26 points. Terry Rozier, 7 threes, 29 points. Jason Tatum, what he's doing as a rookie. I mean, he's got the most points for a Celtics rookie in the playoffs since 1980, and that guy was Larry Bird. And he's on the NBA's top 50 greatest players list ever. So it's amazing what the players are doing. But you talk about a coach who puts his players in a position to be successful and gives them an opportunity to be successful. That is Brad Stevens. For my money, Brad Stevens is coach of the year. And I respect what Mike D'Antoni has done, and you look at it and say that Houston, the best record in the league. But when you're playing with James Harden and Chris Paul, man, you should be pretty darn good. I don't know that you're, 65 wins good, but you should be pretty darn good. I respect what Ty Lue did through the face of adversity. I respect what Brett Brown has done in Philly, taking the laughing stock of the league and getting them the 3 seed. I respect all of that. But when you take away Kyrie Irving for, 20 games, when you take away Marcus Smart for a month, when you lose Gordon Hayward 5 minutes into the first game of the year, and you finish as the 2nd seed in the Eastern Conference, I'm giving all of my praise to you. Brad Stevens, to me, is coach of the year. And again, he just puts players in a position to be successful. And that's what you want. It's not always about who the best players are. It's about how those players that you have fit together. And with that fit, it's about just maximizing the opportunity that those players have, both offensively and defensively. A lot of people rag on Marcus Smart. Maybe no more than Rich, who ragged on Marcus Smart's offense all year long. But his defense and the positions that Brad Stevens puts him in, they are just maximizing his ability. Get this. The 76ers were 1 of 12 from the floor when Marcus Smart finished the possession on Ben Simmons. he finished up with no field goals and zero assists when being guarded by Marcus Smart. Let me repeat that. Ben Simmons, a number one pick in the draft, probable NBA rookie of the year, finished with no field goals and no assists when guarded by Marcus Smart. And he was guarded by Marcus Smart on 17 plays. 17 plays Marcus Smart had Ben Simmons, got no points and no assists. Now, that is in large part due to Marcus Smart's tenacity, his ferocity, and just his general makeup. That can't be overstated. But Brad Stevens, recognizing that, also deserves some praise. And then offensively, I look at it and say Joel Embiid at 7 foot guarding Al Horford at 6'9" is a mismatch. That's not a matchup we would want. That wouldn't be advantageous. Brad Stevens sees that and says, let's run to that matchup. Understand this. Embiid played against Horford on 14 possessions defensively. And on those possessions, the Celtics had 27 points and didn't commit a turnover. Brad Stevens identified that Joel Embiid against Al Horford was a mismatch that the Celtics could exploit. I look at it and say, that's not a matchup that I want. Embiid is bigger, he is stronger, he is quicker, he's more vertical, he's willing to go outside, he can shut Horford down. Nope. Brad Stevens says that's a matchup we can exploit. 27 points, no turnovers for the Celtics offense as a whole when Joel Embiid guarded Al Horford. That is coaching to recognize that. That is great coaching to recognize that. And to me, last year, I came in, I took the job in September of 2016, and I came in right before the Celtics season started in October. And while I paid great attention to the Celtics throughout the year, there were so many other things that were going on for me getting used to work, right? For me, we're right in the middle of an NFL season, right in the middle of the Red Sox going to the playoffs and winning the division. And I'm trying to find an apartment. I was living in a basement that I found on Craigslist. And all of this stuff going on in my life, I didn't appreciate Brad Stevens from the outset of my first year here. Now, fast forward to this season where I was able to be all in on the Celtics from day one of the regular season, but even predating that, from the NBA draft on, I was all in on the Celtics. And just to sit and watch what Brad Stevens has done with this group under these circumstances and how he's gotten these players to buy in, it's absolutely incredible. For athletes that make millions, you generally can see them tone out a head coach, especially the old adage that pro athletes don't want to hear a head coach who came from college. These guys, they believe in Brad Stevens. I mean, and listen to this. This is Terry Rozier after the game. This should prove it to you.
We all got together yesterday, and, you know, we had a plan. And our plan was, you know, ways that we can stop these guys. No matter who on the court, we will coach. And our coaches hold us accountable for taking care of business. And, you know, we hold each other accountable. That's the most important thing. That's why we don't ever feed into the negative things that go around what people say. We got each other. And no matter who out there, we're going to play hard. And we're gonna pay attention to details and take care of business.
So that's Terry Rozier after the game. You hear what he said. We're well coached. Our coaches hold us accountable. And there seems to be a general respect factor there between player and coach. And it's been going on all year. It's been going on all year. It's not a fun storyline to talk about how Brad Stevens relates to the players and how he gets the best out of them, but he puts them in great positions, and he does get the best out of his players. To win that game last night without Jaylen Brown is incredibly impressive. Brad Stevens, to me, is coach of the year. I know the playoffs doesn't count. It's all about the regular season and the voting because the votes are already in. We're just waiting for the end of the season to get the results. Brad Stevens, to me, coach of the year, and to me, it's not even that close. Brent Brown's up there because of what he did with the Sixers, but Brad Stevens, to me, is coach of the year. All right, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You talk about coaches who get the best out of players, and, well, Bill Belichick, I would say, has generally been thought to be one of them, arguably the greatest coach in NFL history. Well, he drafted a quarterback in the 7th round by the name of Danny Etling, and it was one of the surprise subplots of the draft what the Pats would do a quarterback. Danny Etling comes in from LSU, and let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line where we go out to Lafayette, Louisiana, radio station that covers the LSU team, and we've seen Danny Etling up close and personal. David Schultz of 103.7 The Game is with us now on CBGN. Dave, thank you for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brady. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, and let's just say this. The pick of Danny Etling was confusing. Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay come on right after and say, we didn't have this guy as a draftable player. We're not sure why the Pats drafted him as versus just signing him as an undrafted free agent. Tell us about a guy who's going to be competing to be a signal caller on this Pats roster.
Well, it'll be very interesting to go back to see what Kiper said about after Brown was picked in the sixth round back in the day. Also happen to be a Patriots fan, so I've been following this team for a long, long time. You know, Etling's got an accurate arm, very tough. He's going to, try to throw on the run before he actually tries to run downfield. He's very bright. I think he's fluent in Spanish. And a very hard worker. You know, he had to earn the gig. I think he came in when Anthony Jennings was still here, and then the job went to Brandon Harris. And then Brandon Harris played about a game and a quarter, and then he was gone in terms of starting. And then Dan Etling had it for the last 2 years. Coach Ed Orgeron said it was a close battle with Miles Brennan and Lowell Narcisse last year, which apparently it was not. It was Danny Etling's job the whole way. And he's pretty good. He does not have the best of all arms. You know, it fades very badly when you get out to be about 45, 50 yards downfield. But other than that, good intermediate game. And, you know, I thought for a long time that why couldn't he be a backup quarterback in the NFL? I'm not sure he's going to be a starter anytime soon. But he certainly has the mentality, the toughness, the smarts to be a backup quarterback.
One of the things I liked about him when I read more, 27-7 on the touchdown-interception ratio. Then you throw in 60% completion percentage. And 4 years, four different offensive coordinators, four different systems. So he seems adaptable and willing to learn and can accept change. All of those things translate pretty well on paper, Dave.
Yeah, they do. But he's one of those guys that I'm not sure how many games he went out there and won. I was actually advocating, not knowing the actual situation last year. If it was so close, I would have taken a chance with Miles Brennan. I would have gone home, and that would have given me a better chance to win a national championship this year. That's what LSU wants to compete at, and not win 8-9 ball games, what they've been doing under Les Miles for the last few years before they replaced him with Ed Orgeron. So Danny Etling is not going to, I'm not sure how many games he's going to win for you. I'm not sure the game he's going to lose for you. You know, they lost the Mississippi State game, and, you know, they got butt creek in that one. It did not go well. A couple of turnovers, and they couldn't stop the dual threat of Mississippi State in that ball game. They somehow managed to win a Florida game where there was no offense for either team, and the LSU defense came up big. So I'm not exactly sure that Danny Etling's going to go out and win a lot of ball games for you. Like I said, I'm not sure he's a starter in the NFL, but he certainly could be a backup. He can not, he'll go in there and not lose the game for you, is the deal. So that's what I would say.
Well, Dave, that's the Patriots standpoint. Let's talk about the Giants for a second, because you've been in Louisiana for a while. So you were there when Odell Beckham Jr. was at Louisiana. Was he a knucklehead in college? Could we have foreseen what has transpired in the NFL back then? Were there signs?
Well, that was my first year here. I just got here, and I'm not even sure I'd seen an LSU game live before. They lost to Georgia on the road in just a ball game. You know, there was no defense in that game because all of the defense for LSU for the last couple of years was in the pros. But no, I don't think we had seen it. The knucklehead at the time was Jeremy Hill. He got suspended for the couple of games that year. And remember, you know, everyone claims that LSU doesn't have any offense. Well, Mettenberger threw for 3,000 yards. Each of the receivers had 1,000 yards. And Jeremy Hill had 1,500 yards. It's like the first time that anybody's ever done that in college football. But they didn't have a defense or a very young defense. And most of those guys who are young at that defense are now in the NFL as well. But they were just brand new, getting a chance to play. So no, he wasn't really a knucklehead at that point in time. I think maybe stardom. I think maybe New York has, you know, gotten to him a little bit. And let's be honest, he really hasn't done, all that much, right? I mean, he went to South Beach and he punched the wall. Isn't that really what he's done? And he's gone after Josh Norman a little bit, and that's kind of fun for the rest of them.
Dave Schultz, 103-7 The Game in Lafayette, Louisiana, with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Bigger story right now in Louisiana. LSU recruiting offseason or Pelicans actually in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's not even close. It's LSU. LSU is number one, number two, number three, and number four. Absolutely. It's fun that the Pelicans are getting a little pub. Much better series against Portland than anyone had ever thought. I picked it at six. Though three of the four games were close, the series was not. We're hoping, that they can, get this game tonight and then maybe do another one at home. We'll see how good Curry is for the Warriors. Somewhere along the way, the Pelicans have to take away something, and they took away nothing in the first game for the Warriors. In terms of LSU, it's always what's going on, and it may be going in the wrong direction.
I know fans out in the Bayou don't want to hear that, but yeah, LSU in a bit of some tricky waters maybe under Ed Orgeron. They do have a tough schedule starting the season next year as well. But for now, Danny Etling, now a former LSU quarterback, now hopefully a Patriots quarterback, and we appreciate the talk today. Dave Schultz, thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again.
Brady, thanks so much.
I appreciate it. There he goes, Dave Schultz, talking about Danny Etling, new quarterback of the Patriots. Well, potentially, if he is able to make the roster. So we are, but we're not sure. We don't really know. I liked a lot of what he had to say about he's not going to lose you the game, but when you talk about taking over for Tom Brady, well, then you're going to need somebody that's going to win games for you. And it really sounds like they're going to need, it just doesn't feel like Danny Etling, number one, I don't even know if he makes the team, and number two, maybe he's a career backup at best. So I don't think there's anything to be excited about, and therefore I think it was really a wasted pick. I think it was an absolutely wasted pick by the Patriots. If they didn't want to take a quarterback early, they should have just waited and signed somebody off the scrap heap, because there were a lot of people there. Chase Litton of Marshall and Logan Woodside of Toledo and Riley Ferguson, I think, out of Memphis. A lot of guys that went undrafted that the Patriots could have just signed. All right, pitching matchup for the Red Sox, Chris Sale 2-1 up against Jacob Junis of the Royals, who comes in at 3-2. Starting lineups for the Royals, Whit Merrifield leads off at second. Jorge Soler is the DH and hits second. Chesler Cuthbert, he is the third baseman and hits third. Salvador Perez is the catcher. He hits cleanup. John Jay is in right, hitting fifth. Abraham Almonte is in center field. He hits sixth. Lucas Dudas hitting seventh. He's at first. Alcides Escobar is the shortstop. He hits eighth. Alex Gordon's in left, and he hits ninth. For the Red Sox, Andrew Benintendi's in center. Hanley Ramirez, the DH. J.D. Martinez is in left. Mitch Moreland at first. Xander Bogaerts at short. Rafael Devers at third. Jackie Bradley Jr. in right. Christian Vasquez, the catcher. And Soo Wei Lin hits ninth and plays second base. Tom Carradine told us Dustin Pedroia targeting a Memorial Day weekend return. All right, that will do it for us. You can catch us tonight over at the Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30, and we will have everything on the big TVs there. All the Red Sox action, all the Yankees action, NBA and NHL as well. Half-price appetizers and great drink specials as well. We'll see you over there, 7:30 to 9:30, and we're back tomorrow. Red Sox baseball early, we're on after.